there, but they have been so poor, so desperate for so long, it's questionable whether any of their better equipment is still functioning or not sold for whatever people can get. That's what happens when you have a gigantic and wealthy imperium starve and lay siege to a small and poor country. They would be able to fight back if they could sell their oil, I suppose, but they haven't been able to for years, thanks to the U.S. Skipping ahead in El País's article, Maduro's response was in some way a challenge to the government of Donald Trump, who on Wednesday announced the deployment in the Caribbean near the Venezuelan coast of many warships, planes, and special forces to intensify the fight allegedly against drug trafficking. Maduro called the Council of State the highest consultation body to deliberate on a national plan to confront the coronavirus epidemic, pandemic, and announced that he will begin talks with the dissident opposition, Luis Parra, whom the ruling party recognizes as the president of the National Assembly. And speaking for myself, that is an indication of that is very different and terrific indication of desperation on his part. He knows that the soldiers are moving in. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. We are broadcasting to you via 90.7 FM on our great big red and white transmitter in the West Hills, and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring calling in from the Spring Palace in beautiful Brooklyn neighborhood in southeast Portland. I'd like to outline once again that Teresa kind of went into it, the deadly mathematics of the coronavirus, COVID-19. It spreads very quickly. It spreads very far. It has a low death rate, depending on who is inflicted, 1%, 2%, 5%, but it gets everybody. So say 2% of everybody is an awful lot of people, and so the total number of deaths is really high. And so you think that this would be a since it's going to spread throughout the world, apparently the worst is yet to come. You think that this would be a time for the nations of the world to cooperate and fight this this deadly pandemic. But it doesn't look that way. It looks like the United States is trying to use COVID-19 for its own nefarious purposes. You say the U.S. is weaponizing disease. Once again, the U.S. is increasing its sanctions on Venezuela, you know, setting a blockade around Venezuela. Meanwhile, China is sending medical specialists to help deal with this disease. President Trump is increasing the sanctions on Iran. He claims he's still trying to get a deal with Iran. Oh, this is just absolutely insane. We have to remember that we did have a deal with Iran in which they would limit their nuclear experimentation, and the U.S. dumped it. So if Trump is trying to work for another deal, how does anybody know he won't try and dump that one? we might go into the reasons for Trump's dumping of that deal is because it was crafted a lot to a great degree by President Obama, and Trump has got this fetish or this I don't know what you call it. He's got this obsession with undoing anything that President Obama did. Well, President Obama in this case did something that is worthwhile, that is a step towards peace in the world. And Trump, because of his own kind of malignant personality, because of his own obsessions, undid it. And a lot of other bad things followed from that, including the assassination of a Iranian general who was apparently returning from a peace mission to Saudi Arabia. This COVID-19 is spreading around the nation, around the world. Here at home, many people are working from their homes, like yours truly. But the others have to go out into the world. You know, we can't all sit in our rooms and talk to each other and tweet each other or sit at our computers. You know, the work has to be done out in the world. You know, we have the farm workers who feed us all. We have the factory workers who make our stuff, where some of it is useful and some isn't. We have the truck drivers and the railroad workers who move that stuff. And so this tiny little virus is really wrecking our supersized economy. And we might ask, a lot of people are asking, will it recover? We know right now that air travel is way down because, to me, I've always hated flying. It's an ordeal sitting cramped in a flying sardine can. But air travel is down because of the coronavirus. But there's reasons why it'll probably stay down. For one thing, the cheap oil is gone. Our jets, jetliners fly on kerosene, basically, which is refined from petroleum. Every now and then you hear some technical visionary talk about the electric airliners, but I think there's some great difficulties that have to be surmounted. I don't expect we'll ever see airliners are flying electricity, but who knows? But in the meanwhile, the cheap fuel is gone. Air travel, flying these jets, greatly increases the pollution in the atmosphere. And air travel, especially the air travel we've had in the last 50 years or so, it is one factor in this kind of spread of disease. People travel all around the world. You know, they land and spend a few days in one continent or another, come back home. They, while they're there, they pick up a few viruses there. They give a few of their own viruses to their host country. And so it's a way of exchanging disease viruses. Well, you can try and be a little think. Try to imagine a world without air travel. Maybe hard for us to do because we've gotten so used to it, but it is very likely. If people want to call in with their comments on this, the number to call is 503-231-8187. We have a kind of a supersized military, besides supersized economy, which is being brought low by a little virus. We have a supersized military. One way that it's bringing down the U.S. is in the habit of sending its huge aircraft carriers around the world to back up its threats mainly to China and other countries. And But the quarters, the crew's quarters on these aircraft carriers is really kind of tight. If you've ever been on a Navy ship, you know that there's not a whole lot of room to be alone or be away from things. Everybody's kind of jammed together in their sleeping quarters and eating halls and everything. And so apparently the virus is spreading quite quickly in these aircraft carriers, which has resulted in the militaries having to send them back to port. So think of that. These mighty aircraft carriers are being disabled by a little virus. And we might say that some people say that aircraft carriers if China wanted to sink an aircraft carrier, it would be very easy to do. Of course, what keeps them from doing that, I suppose, is fear of the consequences, because that would really touch off a shooting war. But so this is an example of how this virus is kind of playing havoc with our war plans.
Hey, we do have a caller on the line.
Oh, we have a caller. Oh, you're on the air.
A brave caller.
Okay.
Good morning. Hello. Good morning, Per. Thank you. This is Deanna. Per, I wanted to comment on what you were saying, and I think that for those of us who've been saying, will the economy recover, I would like to suggest that the question ought to be, can our planet now recover?
Mm-hmm.
And that and that we really could be thinking in a much more proactive and positive way, not about how to get everybody back. And I know this is what the government thinks about, but we don't have to think about that. We can think about what a great opportunity to really craft on a local level, and then, you know, for suggestions for other local areas, you know, how we can really change everything kind of quickly that we could never have conceived of changing quickly without this coronavirus. So I'll take my response off the air. Thank you.
Well, I think so. It might be this virus might be a little nudge that gets us thinking in more rational ways about this supersized economy.
Oh, Dina, we are losing you. If you could get closer to the phone.
Hello there. Am I on the air?
Oh, I think we may have.
I think we may have lost her.
Yeah,
okay. Well, no, I think she did. She did make her her call. She hung up, and there's this little delay we have that you kind of wonder what you wonder who you're talking to sometimes. We're getting back to our supersized military, which I guess I don't know. Maybe people don't realize this, but our country is spending over $1 trillion a year on war, or preparing for war, or coping with the results of war. You know, the official Pentagon budget, I believe, is something like $750 billion, but it's just, there's a lot of little extras and add-ons that when you put them all in the picture, we have over $1 trillion a year going for war. And by the way, when the when our last Pentagon budget was passed, overwhelmingly, I might add, it was passed. This was not just a Donald Trump military budget, because the Democrats overwhelmingly voted in favor of it too. But I will have to say that our two senators, Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley, both voted against this Pentagon budget. So that's something I would say kudos to them. They did something something good. They were a small group of people who voted against this wasteful spending. So here we are spending $1 trillion a year on war, and it leaves the nation poor. You know, every time people talk about you know, in the halls of Congress or the legislature doing some kind of say, environmental project. There are all kinds of good things the government could be doing, and you hear the same old refrain. Well, where's the money? Where's the money? This is going to cost us something. Well, the answer is very obvious. There's this big pot of money in the Pentagon, over $1 trillion a year. That is there. Why we don't use it, I don't know. We have this, this sort of the usual answer is that, well, the war budget is a federal thing, and we here in Oregon, we're talking about a state budget. Well, this is all very true. You know, the Pentagon has the federal government has its jar of money. The various states have their jars of money. Various cities and counties have their little jars of money. But the thing is, it's the same taxpayer is putting money into all these jars. The only difference is that they are divided up in different ways, and we might examine how these jars are divided, how they are allocated. Why does more money go into the federal jar than the state jar? One thing about the Pentagon budget is that the Pentagon, very cleverly, they try and arrange it so that every congressional district in the nation has at least one military project going, bringing money into that district. Now, some districts, of course, have a lot more Pentagon items, you know, where they had naval shipyards and things like that. But so every congressperson, you know, has a constituency that depends in part on getting their share, small though it may be, of this huge Pentagon budget. So when people say, you know, when we talk about, say, building a railroad system that connects all the cities of this country, well, people ask, where's the money? Well, the money's in Washington at the Pentagon. You know, people talk about some kind of high-speed high-speed rail lines, which I think Europe has them, Asia has them. Now, we don't. We have a very slow and clunky old-fashioned rail line. And if you travel by train a lot, you will notice, you probably are well aware that you know, your train is going along, and all of a sudden it kind of pulls over on a siding and sits there for a while. Maybe 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes, maybe half an hour, who knows? The reason it's doing that is because our Amtrak uses tracks that are owned by the commercial railroads, you know, the freight lines. And so freight lines have a precedence. They take, they come first. So if a freight train happens to be using that track, Amtrak has got to move over and wait until they go by. So we could, to build a high-speed rail network, you'd basically have to build a whole new set of railroad tracks all around the country, and they'd have to be specially built, you know, to handle cars going at that high rate of speed. 150 miles an hour, 200, whatever they had, whatever it's supposed to be. And so, but if not that, why not just build a separate network of rail lines for passenger trains? Doesn't have to be high speed. I'd be very happy if you said trains that go a normal speed, like, say, 80 or 100 miles an hour consistently. That'd be really great. Well, where's the money? Is that the Pentagon? I looked up a thing about the military, and it's very interesting. You know that that in the United States, the U.S. Army has 231 generals. Say that again. The U.S. Army has 231 generals. The Air Force has 198 generals. The Marines, which is a small outfit, they have 62 generals. And the Navy Their equivalent would be admirals, and they have 162 admirals in the U.S. Navy. So that is a total of 653, I guess, I'm not sure what the term is for that, but 653 top military brass, Navy admirals and generals, 653 of them. I think about that. That is more people than were in my high school back in Long Island, New York. That's a lot of that's a lot of flag. I think it's called flags level military officers. And so you wonder what do these people do? They can't all be leading troops into battle or planning strategy. I mean, even with all our warlike plans around the world, I don't think we need 653 top brass to help flesh it out, as it were. So they probably had little desk jobs at the Pentagon. Maybe they sort of liaison with Congress to keep the money flowing. I don't know. I mean, there might be all sorts of things they're doing, you know, sitting at their desk jobs.
We do have a caller in right now, Pear, if you'd like to take a caller.
Yes, we do. We have a caller on the line.
There you go.
Hello there.
Yeah, my name is John, and what I'm calling about is the COVID virus. And
mm-hmm.
I point out that Dr. John Frieden, former head of the CDC, and John C. Blumhouse, a public health specialist at the National Institute of Health, have both suggested that a good contributing factor to late winter, early spring acute respiratory viral infections is a vitamin D less than 50 nanograms per ml. So, you know, Dr. Umhau and his commentary available at Medscape suggest up to 5,000 units of vitamin D daily to get vitamin D blood levels up to 50 and reduce and quite possibly eliminate one even experiencing COVID, let alone having the severe respiratory complications.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, what about vitamin C? Usually vitamin C is what they give you for colds.
Both those individuals said that vitamin D is what's necessary to get optimal performance out of the immune system.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I would suggest, you know, reading Dr. Umhau's article at Medscape.
Medscape, that's M-E-D?
S-C-A-P-E.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And John, U-M-H-A-U.
U-M-H-A-U, Umhau. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's very
good. The traditional way we get our vitamin D is through sunshine, but you have to expose almost half of your skin surface area to get the vitamin D level up above 50 nanograms.
What foods have vitamin D in them?
Well, cod liver oil, oily fish have it. I mean, the traditional ways Eskimos have gotten it, for example, was by eating whale blubber.
Whale blubber.
Yeah, right. So the most straightforward way for us to do it, and to do it as rapidly as possible, is 5,000 units of vitamin D a day.
Yeah, I think I'd rather take it in pill form. When I was a kid, I used to have to take cod liver oil. Hated this stuff. I guess, I don't know, it might be a Norwegian thing, because I had relatives back in Norway who actually worked in a cod liver oil factory. Where I guess they take the livers out of these fish and they rend the oil out of them and put it in bottles to torment little kids all around the world. But anyway, yeah, I think I'd rather take my vitamin D in pill form. Which they
do? I take 2,000 pills a day, plus I take 1 teaspoon of cod liver oil, but I take it lemon flavored. Then that awful flavor is gone.
Lemon flavored cod liver oil. That's interesting. I never heard of that before. Wow.
Yeah, but cod liver oil costs about 10 times more per teaspoon than the vitamin D does in the pill form.
Now, really? Okay.
Yeah, just go look at it at the grocery store.
Well, that's our health tip for today. Take your vitamin D and stay healthy. I don't see a whole lot of sunshine out there right now.
It has to be a large enough quantity to get the vitamin D up to 50 nanograms. There are multiple levels for vitamin D. At 20 nanograms, it prevents rickets and so on up the line. It's not until you get to about 50 that it has a significant effect on the immune system.
Okay, well, thank you for that advice.
Okay.
Get your vitamin D, folks. We need it. Since we can't really, we're not supposed to be going out into the great sunny outdoors like we used to. We have to get our vitamin D in some other way. And, I guess a pill form is the handiest way, better than a teaspoon of cod liver oil. I don't know. I wonder if they have bourbon-flavored cod liver oil. anyway, this, if anybody has... I was going to ask people if they have any ideas. What will you spend this? There's a big pot of money at the Pentagon. What would you like to spend it on? You want to spend it on these obsolete aircraft carriers that are soon to be discarded anyway, that just go around raising havoc in the world? Aren't there better things that we can do with our money? It's not like we have an unlimited supply of money that we can just kind of fund everything in sight. A lot of it's done by deficit spending anyway, and eventually the bills have to be paid, or if not paid, gotten rid of in one way or another. And that brings me, I got a few minutes left. There's a very interesting article, you can find it on the internet, by the economist Michael Hudson. He's somebody really worth reading, Michael Hudson. And he has an article, basically saying that we should have a jubilee where debts are forgiven. Now, actually, this is a kind of a biblical tradition back in ancient Israel, that every 50 years there would be a jubilee where all debts are forgiven, all the accounts would kind of go back to zero, and they'd start all over again. And Michael Hudson goes into history of ancient Babylon, and the reason for this kind of thing is that it kept the economy going. It didn't destroy the economy to wipe out debts. It kept it going because if people were indebted, it kind of messed up their military plans. To have a military, you need people. You need people, these soldiers, and if they're in debt or in prison for debt or working off their debts as kind of a form of serfdom, they're not much use to the military. So the ancient rulers had this practice of wiping out debts and just starting back at zero. And I think that might be a good thing for us to do, for this country. We have this huge debt. The money that is paid in debts goes to the big banks on Wall Street. And one final point, you may think about here at home, is every year, every election year or so, we have there's usually some bond measure on the ballot. Say $1 million for schools or highways or this or that, good things to spend money on. But the way they do it is that the bond measure gets passed, that means the city borrows that money from some bank on Wall Street, and so they borrow $1 million, but by the time they pay it back, you're probably getting up close to $2 million. And that money is just pure interest charges going to the bankers. Well, we don't have to do that. We could have our own public banks. We could have public banks at the state level, like North Dakota, or we could have them at a local level right here in Portland if we wanted to. It would save an awful lot of money, and which, contrary to a lot of people, is not in very great supply because the Pentagon is hogging it all for their nefarious war plans. I just like to read one little paragraph from an article by Finian Cunningham about Iran. The Iran is a particularly poignant case. It has one of the highest infection rates in the world, with thousands of deaths in a matter of weeks. Yet the Trump administration sees fit to not only maintain harsh sanctions on Tehran, and has actually added three more rounds of sanctions against Iran since the epidemic occurred. The deaths in Iran are being multiplied by American policy. This is what the U.S. is doing. While the rest of the world seems to be struggling to cope with this disease and find the, in a peaceful way, the U.S. is manipulating it to serve its own warlike ends. So thank you for listening. Stay tuned to KBOO, your radio station.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9:59. Coming up next is Flashpoints.
You're listening to